Dr. Molly Ladner joins us today to talk about a study that could change the way we approach the prevention of heart disease. Dr. Ladner is board certified in anesthesiology and chronic pain management. He recently left his medical practice to focus on educating people about the benefits of a healthy lifestyle and the science behind fitness. He's the author of the weekly Fitness Rocks podcast and our weekly Healthy Living series. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having me, Mindy.
Well, part of your mission with your website and podcast is to help lay people better understand what's going on in the area of research. So you kind of scour the medical, what do you do? How do you choose what you're going to put on your
That's
podcast?
An interesting question. Basically every week I open up the medical journals. I have online subscriptions to 10 or 15 journals, and I just go through them and I look for articles typically that deal with lifestyle and the risk of chronic diseases, and I read through them and I pick the ones that are most interesting. And I summarize them and report them on my podcast or on our Healthy Living segment here on WCAI. But every now and then, I'll come across an article that is looking specifically at a drug, but in the sense of preventing a chronic disease, so that it sort of crosses into the area that I'm interested in, which is how can we prevent chronic diseases?
And then, this is where we're talking. You looked at the Jupiter study, caught your eye, and we should mention it's been in the news quite a bit lately. It was in the New England Journal of Medicine, and there's been some discussion on this since this study was released. So tell us first, what is the Jupiter study?
The Jupiter study caught my attention because it is symbolic of what's happening in medical research today. And I'll just say for the audience that Jupiter sounds like a strange name for a medical study. The Jupiter study is part of a series of studies designed by AstraZeneca, the drug company that makes the drug that was being studied, called Crestor. And it was a series of studies appropriately named the Galaxy series, because all the studies are named after planets. And Jupiter is an acronym that stands for Justification for the Use of Statins in Prevention, an intervention trial evaluating rosuvastatin. And rosuvastatin is the other name for Crestor. So just to clarify how we got this odd-sounding name for a medical study. Mm-hmm. Now, the Jupiter study specifically looked at using the drug Crestor, which is a statin drug, or people may be more familiar with the idea of a cholesterol-lowering drug. And there are five or six of these currently available: Lipitor, Pravacol, Mevacor, Zocor. I mean, there's several of these. Crestor is one of the newest. And they wanted to see if Crestor would be effective at preventing cardiovascular outcomes, heart attacks, strokes, or other outcomes.
So this would be outside what they're currently doing. Now it's used for lowering cholesterol.
Right now, cholesterol drugs are restricted to people who have high cholesterol. Mm-hmm. But this study wanted to see if it would be effective in a group of people who had normal cholesterol, but an elevated test for inflammation called a C-reactive protein. So that's a very important point to make, because up till now, it has not been in the medical guidelines to prescribe a cholesterol-lowering drug to prevent heart disease in somebody who has a normal cholesterol. So what they've done in this study is look to see whether Crestor would, and specifically Crestor, would reduce the risk of heart disease in people who had normal cholesterol but an elevated C-reactive protein. Mm-hmm. And the people in the study were described as healthy people with normal cholesterols who just happened to have an elevated C-reactive protein.
And one of the things that you kind of take issue with is the word healthy, because you're saying they're clearly...
I think it's very disingenuous. Because if you have an elevated C-reactive protein, then something's wrong. So to describe these people as healthy, I think, is a little bit misleading, plus the fact that 75% of these people were overweight, a fair amount of them had high blood pressure, 40% of them had a condition called metabolic syndrome, which we know is a significant predisposing factor for developing heart disease and type 2 diabetes and cancer and other chronic diseases. 16% of them were smokers. So this was not a group of people that I would consider especially healthy. Mm-hmm. But that's how they were described in the study.
Right. Before we get into some specifics about the study, one of the things that one of the reasons that caught your eye is because you're looking at using a drug as prevention, which is something that we don't normally think of in the terms of why don't you describe what we mean by prevention traditionally?
To me, and maybe I'm out on a limb on this, but to me, prevention is simple stuff. exercising, eating a healthy diet, not smoking, maintaining a healthy weight. This is a strategy that I consider prevention. And as I pointed out on the last show that we did, the World Health Organization has identified this simple strategy involving these four items, exercising, eating healthy, not smoking, maintaining a healthy weight, as an effective strategy for reducing the risk of heart disease by, or reducing the total number of heart attacks by 80%, the total number of cases of type 2 diabetes by 90%, and all cancers by 30 or 40%. So certainly this simple formula is an effective strategy of prevention. But now we have this new idea being pressed that perhaps prevention means taking a drug, and this particular study taking Crestor. Mm-hmm. And it leads me to something that I really want to talk about, which is how this study was designed. They compared the drug Crestor in a group of 18,000, roughly 18,000 people, just shy of 18,000 people, which were divided evenly into two groups. One took Crestor, and the other group got placebo. That's it. There were no other comparison groups. They did not compare Crestor to existing drugs or other statin drugs, which we also know are effective at lowering C-reactive protein. They did not compare Crestor to anti-inflammatory drugs like a baby aspirin every day. They did not compare Crestor to a lifestyle intervention group where they would take these people and put them through exercise and have them eat healthier diets. They only compared Crestor to placebo.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you right there, because there are lots of clinical trials done by lots of drug companies, and generally, don't we see them comparing whatever the drug in the clinical trial is to placebo? Isn't that sort of the norm?
This has become standard to only have two groups, the drug in question and placebo, if it's a drug trial that's sponsored by the mm-hmm. pharmaceutical industry, which most of them are. And this is for very obvious reasons that Marcia Angel, former editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, points out in her book, The Truth About the Drug Companies, that this study design is done very intentionally. It's very easy to make your drug look good when you compare it to doing nothing. Mm-hmm. When you compare your drug in head-to-head comparisons with other drugs and other treatment interventions, you run the very significant risk that your drug may not look so effective or as good. So this is a study design that people should be concerned about. And before we get any further into the study design, I think it's very important that we talk about something else, if you don't mind.
Go ahead. What's that?
This study, the Jupiter study, was sponsored by AstraZeneca, which is the company that makes the drug that was being studied. There were 14 authors on this study. 11 of them are paid consultants by AstraZeneca. And the lead author of the study, who is a paid consultant for AstraZeneca, owns the patent on the lab test for C-reactive protein, and he has licensed that patent to AstraZeneca. Presumably, owning a patent means that you have some financial interest in whether or not people get tested mm-hmm. for that thing. So there are enormous financial right. interests at play in the design and structure of this study.
Again, is that unusual?
That is sadly becoming very common, and I think it's something that people need to be concerned about. Now, I want to also point out that this is not information that I dredged up somewhere. This is information that is printed very clearly in all papers because they're required to disclose financial conflicts.
It's not hidden. They're not trying to hide this.
They're
fact.
Not trying to hide this, although it's printed at the very end of the paper in extremely small print. But it's there, and so when I say these things, I don't want people to think that I'm looking for conspiracies and I'm digging up information from questionable sources. This information on these clear conflicts of interest comes directly from the authors who wrote the paper.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's give our toll-free number in case somebody would like to chime in here or have a question or comment. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@wgbh.org. Now, from just looking at the drug company's perspective here when we're talking about clinical trials, I would think they might argue, you know, they've got to be tested somehow. We do have government research, National Institutes of Health, but they can't obviously cover all the research that needs to be done or testing of all the drugs. Does NIH do some of this drug testing as well, or is their research specifically on understanding the disease, whatever it may be?
That most of these clinical trials where drugs are being tested in populations of people, the majority of them are now carried out and studies that are sponsored by the drug companies. Occasionally, National Institutes of Health and other government-funded organizations will do these clinical trials. Now, and I don't want to get too much into that, but a lot of the basic research on mechanisms of disease and molecules that might be effective for fighting disease are carried out at publicly funded research centers. But when we get into clinically testing effectiveness of drugs, that is largely done by the companies, the pharmaceutical companies who are making the drugs. I think we should talk about what they found in the mm-hmm. Jupiter study, because that's what's really going to be used to change the way we think about preventing heart disease. And on the surface, the findings of the Jupiter study appear to be quite impressive. Is it okay if I...
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
The study, which just hit the lay press in a big way, was reported in the New York Times and the Washington Post and all major publications talked about the study, with a litany of experts hailing the study as a landmark study and a breakthrough study. And what they found and what's being reported is that Crestor and this group of people reduced the risk of having an adverse cardiovascular outcome by around 50%, which sounds very impressive.
Sure, you hear 50%.
Yeah, it's a big deal. But we need to look at what they actually found. The study went for 1.9 years. It was originally supposed to go 4 years. It was cut short because the safety review board felt that the differences between the two groups was too great to ethically go on. So they stopped the study at 1.9 years. At that point, there was a 50% relative risk reduction in adverse cardiovascular outcomes between the group taking Crestor and the group doing nothing, the placebo group. But we need to look at what that means, because this is a relative risk reduction. The numbers are as follows. There were 8,901 people in each group. In the placebo group, after 1.9 years, 251 people had some sort of adverse cardiovascular event. In the Crestor group, 140 or 150 had an adverse cardiovascular event. So that's 2.8% of people in the placebo group versus 1.6% of people in the Crestor group, which is an absolute difference of 1.2%, which is not as impressive as a 50% reduction. It also brings up another very interesting and important statistical evaluation, which is something called number needed to treat. And in this study, the authors readily acknowledge that somewhere around 100 people would need to take Crestor, 100 people who had these criteria to be mm-hmm. in the study, would need to take Crestor to prevent one person from having an adverse cardiovascular event. So again, that means 99 people would do just fine if they did nothing mm-hmm. and not be exposed to the side effects. Another thing that they found in this study was that the people taking Crestor had a higher rate of developing type 2 diabetes.
Let's go to Janice, who's calling from Falmouth. Oh. Hi, Janice.
Hi, morning. I'd like to thank you for talking about issues like this. It's really, really important that people understand the basics of the study and what these numbers really mean. I'd like to ask about possible long-term side effects. Mm-hmm. Presumably, if somebody goes on Crestor, they're on it for years. What are possible long-term side effects?
That's a great question. And in an editorial that accompanied this paper in the New England Journal of Medicine, a doctor named Mark Hlatke at, I believe, Stanford, wrote in his editorial that this study was for 1.9 years, and presumably if we're going to put people on Crestor to prevent heart disease, that will be forever, for life.
Mm-hmm.
And we now have sad and discouraging information that people in their very early life are developing elevated C-reactive proteins. So this could mean that people might be taking Crestor for decades. He brings up the point that we don't know what the long-term consequences of decades worth of taking these drugs might be. And he brings up an excellent point that in the study, the Jupiter study, because these people started off with normal cholesterols, they developed extraordinarily low levels of LDL cholesterol, so-called bad cholesterol, to levels less than 55 milligrams per deciliter. And he points out, we don't know if that's necessarily a safe thing to do. I mean, it might be, but we don't know. So there, you bring up an excellent point that we don't have data on what the long-term consequences of taking drugs like this for decades might be.
Janice, thank you for your question and your comment. Appreciate your
phone
call.
Thank you very much for your work.
Sure. And Janet is calling from West Tisbury. Hi, Janet.
Hi. In the September 25th issue of the New England Journal of Medicine, there's an article about treating children with statins. And I wondered what you thought about that. That kind of works into what you just discussed.
Yeah, I actually did a podcast on that article. That's a very interesting article because it contradicts something I just said earlier. That article did not disclose the financial conflicts of interest that the authors who wrote it had. And I wrote the American Academy of Pediatrics and asked them, and they did not answer me. I subsequently found out that at least a couple of the authors did have financial connections to the industry. But that's one interesting point about the study. The other interesting point and scary point is that that study was proposing that it might be reasonable to put children as young as 7 or 8 years old on statin drugs to prevent cardiovascular disease, which I think is something that we really, as a society, need to step back and ask what is going on here. And as a point I wanted to make earlier, which is that in these studies, we continue to overlook the impact of lifestyle in preventing heart disease. And one of the authors that I emailed when I tried to understand the Jupiter study, I emailed several people who wrote this study or who wrote similar studies. And one of them was a doctor from the Brigham and Women's Hospital who recently published an article about lifestyle and heart disease. And he wrote me back that high C-reactive protein is fundamentally a consequence of poor diet, lack of exercise, being overweight, and smoking. And so I think as a society, when we start getting studies suggesting that we use drugs to prevent things like heart disease as a consequence of high C-reactive protein, we need to be asking the question, what would be the outcome if we simply started imposing on people the idea of taking better care of themselves instead of taking expensive drugs? By the way, another very important thing we need to point out, the Jupiter study, if it becomes used as a means of new guidelines, would expand the market for Crestor by an estimated 11 million people. The drug costs $1,250 a year, so that is roughly $14 billion a year to put people on Crestor to prevent something that might be just as well prevented by a cheaper drug or a healthier lifestyle. We don't know because they didn't look at that in this study. And this is at a time when our nation's healthcare expenses are going through the roof.
Yeah. Janet, thank you for your phone call. Our toll-free number is 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. I have an email here, but before I read that, I want to ask you a question. Would this, as looking at doctors who might be looking at this research, because you, lifestyle change, as we know, there are some people who are just not going to change lifestyle. It's too difficult for whatever reasons, but they would be willing to take a pill, being a statin. So this might be of benefit to those people.
This is a problem that we have, and you're absolutely right. I mean, some people are just not going to exercise. They're not going to give up their unhealthy foods. They're not going to stop smoking. They're just not going to do these things. And we can do our best to convince them that they should. The one thing I would say about lifestyle, you don't have to train for the Olympics to get the benefits. All studies that look at lifestyle to prevent chronic diseases have consistently shown that it's very modest changes in lifestyle. 30 minutes of moderate physical activity goes a very long way, and that's just walking around your neighborhood. Eating less processed food, fewer cheeseburgers and french fries and a little bit more fruits and vegetables makes an enormous difference. Stopping smoking speaks for itself. That's an enormous problem. So these are not enormous lifestyle changes that we're talking about.
Right. Dr. Gross has written to us. He says, despite Jupiter, which may be influenced by its sponsorship by AstraZeneca, we still don't know what causes many, if not most, heart attacks and strokes in the U.S. Jupiter's conclusion is that the current thresholds for treating with statins based on LDL cholesterol levels are not reaching many people who can benefit from treatment. That claim must be corroborated, and to date, the literature is conflicting. However, Jupiter still represents good science and deserves attempts to repeat its effects. It was stopped after too short of a time. The C-reactive protein level is still questionable. And he also writes, properly designed pharmaceutical company-sponsored studies should be reliable. The best we would be studies underwritten by a foundation funded by multiple companies rather than a single one.
Yeah. Dr. Marcia Angel, again, former editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, has proposed in her book, The Truth About Drug Companies, that we really need this kind of research being done by independent organizations with no financial interest in the outcome. And I agree with everything that Dr. Gross just said, except I take issue with the fact that simply comparing one treatment to doing nothing, I think, is perhaps not bad science, but it is incomplete science because it doesn't tell me what my options might be.
There may be more options.
It just simply tells me that this drug is better than doing nothing.
Okay. Let's talk to Mort, who's calling from Nantucket. Hi, Mort.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Thank you. My question revolves again around the side effects. Mm-hmm. I am sensitive in terms of muscle pain to every statin I've tried, and I've tried all of them. Are there any firm data on the percentage of muscle pain side effects from the statins that can be relied on, since the advertisements always refer to this as a minor side effect?
Okay. I'm not going to quote an exact percentage because I don't remember it off the top of my head, but I do want to point something out with regards to muscle cramps. In this Jupiter study, I think it's important to recognize that they found no difference in overall rates of side effects between Crestor and placebo, for whatever that's worth. But you bring up another point that I want to point out. There was an article in Business Week in January of 2008 about the statin drugs and the author taking the point of view that perhaps they're not as effective as we thought. And he quoted several medical experts, and one of the medical experts made the following point, which I think is very telling. When drug companies report the benefits of their drug, they report them to us as relative risk reduction, as we've just talked about. So in this case, Crestor had roughly a 50% relative risk reduction of the outcome. They don't tell us that the number needed to treat is something like 100. So one in 100 people are going to get the benefits of the drug and the other 99 aren't. When they report their side effects, they report the side effects as a number needed to treat. So perhaps one in 100 gets some particular side effect, which might in fact represent a relative risk of that side effect of 50% or better. Mm. So they use the statistics to their advantage. Your question is about muscle cramps, and a substantial number of people, although certainly not all, and not even most people who take statins do get side effects like muscle cramps and other significant side effects. And again, in Crestor, in the Jupiter study, more people taking Crestor developed type 2 diabetes than people taking placebo, which is of obvious and significant concern.
Yeah. Mort, thanks for your phone call. With every drug, there's a side effect. And I guess this comes down to you have to weigh the benefits to the risk. So you have to weigh, is this worth it?
Exactly. So imagine the scenario, as other experts have talked about in this study. You get a prescription for a drug, and your doctor says there's a 1 in 100 chance it's going to help you. There are significant side effects that might occur, and it's going to cost you $1,250 a year. And we don't know because the study didn't address the fact that another cheaper drug might do just as well or better, or simply changing your lifestyle might do just as well or better. How effective how appealing does that drug sound if it's presented to you that way, as opposed to simply saying, this drug could reduce your risk of a heart attack by 50%?
Mm-hmm. Now, are there follow-up studies that will be following on this Jupiter study that may look at some of those other questions, like lifestyle or aspirin or other statins?
I emailed the lead author of this study, Dr. Paul Ridker, and asked him specifically, did you collect data on the lifestyle of these people? And he emailed me back that they did not. They did not collect data on how they ate, whether they exercised, what their fitness levels were. In their study, in their paper, they say in the concluding remarks that this study opens up the question that in the future we should be studying various anti-inflammatory drugs, he didn't say which particular ones, and how they might work in this same group of people. So they do talk about that.
So there may be a follow-up. Let's talk to Greg, who's calling from Brewster. Hi, Greg.
Hi, how are you today?
Great.
This is a great pleasure that I'm listening to a show like this because I was steeped in research methodology when I was an undergraduate and took some things with me. The number of confounds in this study are unbelievable, and the fact that the lay press makes such a big deal about it is really, I think, a symptom of how sick our society is. Like you said, we really do need to put the emphasis back on true prevention through diet, exercise, you know, stopping smoking, et cetera. And I think when the press gives this much attention to a study like this, it just reeks too much of self-interest by the drug companies. And I'm very thankful that you're having this show.
Greg, thank you for the phone call. Appreciate your comments.
Thank you.
Yeah, I want to just say something. I want to make it clear. I am not a biostatistician. I am not a trained researcher. And for me to understand studies like this, I have to read them several times. I email several medical researchers that are experts and ask them to explain the various points to me. It takes a lot of time for me to really understand the implications of studies like this. And the average practicing doctor, I'm retired. I don't practice medicine. The average practicing doctor doesn't have time to do that. And so when they get a study from the New England Journal of Medicine, which is arguably the most prestigious journal in the world, and the abstract says this drug will reduce your risk of heart attacks by 50%, mm-hmm. That sounds pretty good to them.
Right. And this is not the final word. I have the January issue of Rx News Connection, which goes to the pharmacist, and it says, tell interested patients that experts recommend following current guidelines until more information is available. Statins are not recommended for relatively healthy individuals with normal cholesterol levels. So right now, it has not at this point changed the guidelines, but you're fearful that it will. I guess our best hope is that we get some more research that will answer a lot of the questions that we have.
I'm confident that it will. I know that it will. It'll take time, but it will change. And I think we need to be concerned about this. We need to be asking the question, who's doing our medical research and what are their goals in producing this research? I think it's a fair question that we should ask as a society.
Dr. Monty Ladner, as always, thanks for being here. Appreciate all your work. I'm Indy Todd. Thank you for listening.